Welcome to the Smichael Speaks podcast. This is the space and the place for leadership learning. I'm Joanne Smichael. I'm a speaker, an educator, a consultant, and a forever student of the world. Enjoy this episode. Welcome to this episode of the Brain Matters series. This is a very special interview for a lot of reasons that will be clear in just a few minutes. Welcome, my dear, dear friend, Teresa Ayotte, dear friend, dear colleague. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. It's always great to spend time with you, hang out, talk. I love the way that when we're together, we always seem to talk about everything and nothing. So that's really the mark of a good friendship. So I'm very happy to be here. I'm very happy to spend some time with you today.
I love that we do everything and nothing well.
I agree.
We met a long time ago when you hired me to present at one of the American Healthcare Association events. And I still remember Mariana Graycheck. She is the person who connected us. And then over time, a friendship began. What a blessing.
It has been a blessing. It really has. I think that was our second Quality Summit in Baltimore in 2009, 2010. And yeah, we just clicked. And you have been a very positive contributor to our education over the years. You've done keynotes, you've done sessions, and I'm just grateful that it's given us a friendship in addition to just working together.
Yeah, I feel the same way, especially about the friendship, because, you know, work relationships come and go, but friendships don't. They don't.
Yeah, agree.
I want to talk a little bit about your career at American Healthcare. You are now the VP of Education and Events and Education. 20-year career with the same association. Can you talk a little bit about your path, some of the highlights and the lowlights along your journey?
Yeah, so I come from a television production background. I spent 10 years with the Discovery Channel when it was a channel and not a big conglomerate. And I started there as a staff producer, associate producer, and then I decided to go out on my own and freelance. So I was a freelance producer for 5 years, but freelancing is no joke, and it's a hustle. And I had two small kids at home, and I just wanted, you know, health insurance is important, 401k is important. I just wanted the stability of working in an organization where I could build community and build relationships. And, you know, that's what AHCA has done for me. I started as a manager doing one event. Mm-hmm. I did our convention. And then I just grew with the association. As our number of events grew, I grew with them. And here I am 20 years later. That's just crazy to me. 20 years later, I am now the events and education VP. I have the most incredible team. I view my team as a family, and together we get some stuff done. So I'm really proud of us and our accomplishments. And I'm proud to work for the American Healthcare Association. It's a positive force for the needs of the folks who are out there providing care.
Yeah. Yeah. And for people who don't know, the American Healthcare Association represents owners, operators of long-term care, post-acute care facilities, yeah. Whether it's small companies or very, very large companies. That is your membership, correct?
It is. And then we also have the National Center for Assisted Living is also within our umbrella. And as you can imagine, with assisted living in the title, that's their focus. That's their piece of the care spectrum that they focus on. But we're all in it for the same reasons, so that America's seniors get the care that they need and deserve, and that there's a path for people like me who are in my 50s, who aren't even really thinking about long-term care yet, but there's sort of this in working here in this industry, there's sort of this comfort knowing that whatever level of care you need, there's someone out there who's specialized in it or providing it. And I don't know that I would have understood that had I not worked here for 20 years. And, you know, it can be a lot. So it can
I
be a lot
know.
when you're in that, when you're in that moment, like your parents are sick or you're sick and it's, you're trying to figure it all out. So I feel like working here has given me a bit of an advantage as I move forward with my diagnosis and what's going to happen. So.
So now, let's go there. Your life has taken a dramatic, unexpected turn. Dramatic, unexpected, and when you told me, really shocking. Can we talk about this diagnosis?
Yeah, so I was diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's disease earlier in the spring. And the irony of being diagnosed with a disease that is, you know, affecting the people in a lot of people in long-term care isn't lost on me as working in the long-term care space. So there is an irony there. But that is a hidden blessing too, because having worked in the space and a lot of exposure to signs, symptoms, and challenges, you know, I kind of had a suspicion that, you know, something was happening. So yeah. And has it changed my life? Yeah, it absolutely changed my life. It's so I have a focus, you know, I have this new focus, right? And what does that focus mean? And how does it impact work? And how does it impact me? And how does it impact my family? So it's just a lot. It's a lot to take in, a lot to think about, a lot to process.
So, what were the earliest signs? Like, when did you know that something was just off kilter?
So last year was a very tough year for me professionally. And I'm going to say me because I don't want to make it seem like everybody else had the same experience. But there were just, we have a very busy workload in the organization and my team. And last year there were two things that happened that just sort of blew up our flow, right? And normally blowing up the flow is fine. I'm just all about getting it done. What's the pivot? What do we have to do? Where do we go next? I could not do that. And to me, that was the beginning of signs. I spent the whole year wondering why I couldn't follow up, why I couldn't keep up. My boss was frustrated because I would, that wasn't me. She was used to here, 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 here. She'd give me like five different things and I would catch them all and do them all. And I wasn't catching anything, to be honest. And it was very frustrating. I just chalked it up to stress. But my daughter, who lives with us, kind of noticed, I think, that I wasn't myself. I was forgetting things. You know, I'd go out to the grocery store for four things and I'd call home and be like, I don't remember what I came here to get. And, you know, they'd have to remind me. And so she went to my husband and she said, something's wrong with mom. And right about that same time or shortly thereafter, I was like, this is not me. Something's going on. This, I got to get this figured out. And also, I had this very weird, constant headache. And it wasn't like a headache, like a headache. You know, you take a Tylenol. It was almost like a heavy blanket was laying on my brain, and I don't know how else to describe it. But my brain didn't feel foggy. It just felt slow, and it felt tired. And I just again attributed everything to stress because we had I had such a bad year last year. But then we went to see the doctor, and you know, that started the process.
I forgot to mention you're a wife. You're a mom of two young adults. How long have you and Larry been married?
33 years, 33 years. We were college sweethearts, so
I love that. I love
yeah.
that. So, Kate made it clear that something was off. What did Larry do? Like, what were the steps? And were you open to let's go figure this out?
Yes, I was very open to it. And my husband always says that, you know, I'm the light of his life. He adores me. So his initial reaction was, well, we'll figure it out. We'll do it together. And he's been with me every step of the way, every doctor's appointment, every doctor's phone call, every mini breakdown that I've had. He's just been there to hold and console. And I've not had many. I'm very stoic in the way that I deal with things. And so it, and we've kind of, that's how we are as a family. We're all very matter of fact. Okay, mom has early onset Alzheimer's disease. What do we do? And I'm not saying emotion is bad. We are also very deeply emotional people, but in the way that we deal with things, we just put the thing out and we just figure it out. And not a lot of hand-wringing, not a lot of feeling sorry for ourselves. We just are like, okay, well, if this is the thing, then what do we do? And so it's early onset Alzheimer's. I can't even say it. It's a tongue twister. It's early onset Alzheimer's. It's hitting our mom. She is, in their words, a force of nature. I do so many things.
I would agree with that. Definitely a force of nature.
Oh, thanks. Thanks. I like to be busy, I like my mind to be busy. I like my body to be active. And so, yeah. So they just kind of, we all hopped in the same boat and we were like, let's get this figured out. And that's where we're still figuring it out. So.
You have never been a person who was a bystander in your life. You've always been a woman with a strong sense of agency and self-efficacy. So once you got the diagnosis and had a minute to absorb the shock, how did you manage the course you were going to take at work? Because you weren't ready to say, oh, I'm going to just stop working and walk by the beach.
Yeah, no. I wasn't ready. I love my job. I think I said that already. I love the people I work with. I consider them family. I love the work that I do, the value, the mission of the organization. And I knew that because we all worked in the space, that to go and tell them that I had a diagnosis that is cared for in our space, that it would be shocking, I think, for them because of my age and because of the high level at which I normally function. But when I told everyone, this makes me emotional because when I told them, I thought they would be very businesslike about it. Like I'd get all these forms to fill out or whatever. And that it was so human, the way that they reacted. I think because I am more than just an employee to them. I think I would, I think I feel comfortable saying that. And I think the approach has been, we'll figure it out. What accommodations do you need? How can we help you? And that's at the senior leadership level. When I decided to tell my team, I was told you don't have to tell anybody, right? Like after I told my leadership team, they were like, you don't have to tell anybody. Nobody has to know, and unless and until you're ready. And I was like, oh no. They have to know. I need to preserve the reputation I have with people. And if I start to change in who I am at work or the level of contribution, people are going to start to ask questions. And I want to drive the narrative. I want them to hear the truth from me. I want them to ask me any questions. I don't want them to be nervous. I don't want them to be worried that they're going to upset me or hurt me. No. I want to talk about it. And that's really, really how I approached it. So after I told my leadership team, I told my team, but I did it individually. I didn't get them all together and say, surprise, I have Alzheimer's. I did it because I know individually each one of them would have wanted to react authentically versus being on a Zoom screen with seven people and having a personal reaction in front of a big group of people. That's not how I wanted it to be. And they are just so great. Like, the reactions I got from each of them was exactly what I expected from them. And I was really appreciative that they had the opportunity to do it in private. You know, a couple of them were like, well, dang, what do we do next? And a couple of them were like, okay, I need a moment. And a couple of them were pretty emotional about it. And I couldn't have dealt with all of that spectrum of emotion at once.
Sure.
And so selfishly, to have been able to tell them one at a time and answer their specific questions, it gave me a moment after each conversation to sort of regroup, pull myself back together, and be ready to talk about it again. So, yeah. And then as word has gotten out, and one of the things I said was, it's not a secret. Mm-hmm. If someone says to you, you know, something wrong with tea, everyone calls me T at work. So if someone were to say to them, something wrong with her, she doesn't seem well, they could either say, well, you should talk to her about it. Or they could say, you know, she's recently been diagnosed. But I don't think that's happened to them. I made a point to tell the people at work outside of my original team myself. There's some people who've been there as long as I have. My best friend works at the association. So there's almost 100 of us. I don't have the same relationship with all 100 people, but the people from 20 years ago who are still there, who came up in the association with me and who I've got not just work relationships with, but friendships with, I wanted them to hear it from me first. And so that's the way I approached it.
You know, when I think about when we talked a couple months ago, when you told me, I was struck by how matter of fact you were and how you were you.
Oh.
Like it wasn't any different from our regular conversations. You were you, and you gave me the time to kind of be in shock, and, you know, but you were you, and you were still concerned about me and, you know, the wedding and all the stuff and, you know, speaking with you guys this fall. But I was struck by how much you have been you, and even in your ability to advocate for yourself in the organization, when you went back after the diagnosis and went to HR and said, I need this, this, and this, when you went to the CEO and said, this is what's going on. But those are you things. And I love that you haven't lost those you things, that fierce ability to advocate, that fierce ability to communicate clearly and to deal with the very, very, very hard stuff. So I'm curious about this. You're still working at the very senior level, still mm-hmm. managing your team, still a very active contributor to American Healthcare. They've been gracious about making sure there were accommodations made for all of your evolving needs. What are some of the adjustments and the modifications that you've made so that you're still maximally effective?
The biggest thing is the need for rest. So what I notice is I have, I'm like myself until about 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, where it's almost like somebody turns off the lights, and I don't know how else to describe it. Not that I go dark, but just that maybe somebody turns down the thermostat or something, but the level of energy just really drops. And so the ability to have that rest when I need it, has been critical. The ability to honestly say, I'm not sure this is the right thing for me right now. Can we ask someone else to help? Can we, you know, I've not had any worries about saying maybe or saying no to something. Whereas previously, if you asked me to do it, I was like, yep, just put it on my plate, do it, do it, do it, do it, do it. And I recognize now I cannot do that anymore. I cannot just say yes to things. The disease is impacting my short-term memory. So anything that I knew before the diagnosis or before these last couple of years, when it was probably, which it, I've probably had the disease for a couple of years, but the diagnosis recently, I just did it. If you asked me to do something, I just did it. You know, it just was on the plate to be done. I got it done. And so I think their recognition that that's not possible anymore, has been the biggest accommodation for me, is that blessing of, okay, she works differently now. We're going to have to work differently with her. I need things in writing. You can't just say to me, I need you to do this, because my short-term memory is not going to grab that. But if you send it to me in writing and I can put it on my to-do list, then and then I look at my to-do list, that will jog my memory. We had this conversation. Or if I have it in writing in an email and I see the email and there's detail, that helps me move forward. But all the things I did before, like organizing education and planning for the development of my team and all of those things, I still can do them. It's the new things that are coming in, or just even old things, but are that are being requested in the moment, I'm not going to remember. So I kind of need things in writing, right? That's really the biggest accommodation, is reminding me and follow up and, you know, writing, because the short-term memory is the is where it's being impacted, where the disease is impacting me.
So, did you just instinctively know that those were the right accommodations for you, or did your doctor or somebody in your care team tell you?
So I instinctively knew that for me, those were the core things that I needed to ask for accommodations, was just patience and an adjustment to the way that we work together. I did have neuropsych testing done, just to sort of measure what had been impacted, my intelligence, my memory, you know, whatever. And so I got those results back, and there were some accommodations that my doctor made, and it was really all around work. Not that I can't do the work, but the way that I should do the work. Like, I should probably work in the morning. Like, the biggest things I should do need to be in the morning, because that's when I'm the freshest. I need things in writing. I have this, my husband found me this thing that I can wear on my clothes that is a recorder, a note recorder. So as I'm talking, I can say, remember to, and the recorder will pick it up and it makes a list of the things I want to remember, so that I'm not looking constantly for a piece of paper and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. And so I talked to my IT department, and they agreed that I could use it. I just have to make sure I disclose to people that if I'm in a meeting and I'm taking notes, that the meeting is being recorded so that I can get the notes, right? Because you don't want to record something and not have people have a said okay. Because sometimes in meetings, you know, you're chatting and somebody says something and they don't really want that written down or recorded. So, you know, we're all human. We all have our moments. So I just have to let people know. I haven't started employing it at work yet. I'm still trying to get comfortable with that, but I do use it at home. So.
So I know you don't want pity. I know that. I know you, and I know that. How do you help people to get that, to get to the fact that you do not want or need their pity, that you just need, I don't know, reasonable accommodations, the same level of relationship? How do you get people to do that?
Well, I think part of every conversation I've had that was the most meaningful was to let people know I'm still me. I'm still me. I still think the same way. I can still think. I can still do. it's just that the order might be different. And I said to them, I don't want you to treat, I just, I'm honest, I don't want you to treat me any differently. But what I do want you to do is treat me like you would anybody else who forgot something. Hey, T, you forgot this. Not, hey, T, I'm really sorry to have to tell you this, but you forgot this. No, you just tell me I forgot it. Don't couch anything that you say to me in sympathy or whatever. I don't know. Empathy is a better feeling, but just talk to me like I'm me. Interact with me like I'm me. And when I am not me, tell me I'm not me. You forgot this. Can we talk about this again? Because I'm not sure you understood what I needed from you. Just continue to operate like you would have had I not had a diagnosis, because they would have done that. They would have said, you forgot this, or hey, you need to follow up on that. Just keep doing it, but you might have to do it more. And when I first told them being my team, I'm going to really focus on my team when I answer a lot of these questions, because they were the most intimate conversations that I had about it. I just told them, I don't want to, I don't want things to change until it needs to change. And change is coming. I know that. I think we all know that. Because part of the other part of this decision is, do I want to limp out of my career, or do I want to go out of my career? And there's a difference between going out and people remembering you in a way you worked really hard to get to, versus, okay, well, we'll just move her over here. Oh, she's now she can't really do that, so we'll move her over here. And all of those things are going to happen. I don't want that to happen in a professional environment. I worked really hard for the career that I have. I love my contribution to our space, and I don't want to be remembered for less than that.
I have to say this. When we had lunch a couple of weeks ago, I was struck by how you are. I'm not sure what I expected, T, but when we looked at each other and we met, I'm like, oh, she's just her. She's her regular her.
Yes. Oh, I think there's this preconception that people with Alzheimer's, or any memory-related disease, really, the second they're diagnosed, they somehow change in form, in personality, and it's an immediate change. It's not. It's slow for a lot of us. It's going to be a slow progression. But I think when you think about Alzheimer's and TVs and TV and movies, it's portrayed differently, right? I'll tell you, there's this movie and book called About Alice. I don't know if you've heard of it.
No.
But it is, I don't remember the name of the author, but it is the story of a woman in her 50s, top of her career, who's diagnosed, starts to have memory issues, can't remember how to make the macaroni and cheese that she's been making like forever. She goes out for a run and she gets lost. She's standing in front of a, she's a prominent professor at a big university, and she's standing in front of a lecture hall and she can't remember what she was going to say. All of those things have happened to me. I've been out for a run and got turned around and felt very confused and lost and fearful. And I've stood up in front of a group of people and forgotten what I was going to say. All of those things have happened to me. So I would recommend anybody who loves someone with Alzheimer's disease, or is in the beginning of what Alzheimer's disease is going to do for their family, read that book, watch the movie. Julianne Moore won an Oscar for her portrayal of Alice in the film. I watched it on a plane right after I was diagnosed, and I cried the entire time. So how dumb was that to watch? To watch an already emotional movie attached to something I was newly experiencing on a plane with 300 other people.
Strangers.
But that, I mean, you know, but I highly recommend it. It's an incredible book, and it is an accurate depiction of the early diagnosis and the feelings and what you go through. They take her all the way through to the end. So if, in watching through to the end, I think to myself, oh, is that how I'm going to be? So that it's also, anyway, highly recommend it. I think it's an accurate, sensitive, in your face portrayal of what to expect.
What this is going to be. When I was talking about this interview this morning, I thought about what Nancy Reagan said, the long goodbye, that it's a long goodbye, and hopefully a long, gentle goodbye.
You know, I had forgotten that Mrs. Reagan said that, but and you know, now, and I was young in the Reagan administration, so the Alzheimer's to me was like, what even is that? You know, I was at college doing my thing. You know, the president is sick. Oh, that's really sad. And I probably went to class or went out with my friends. You know, like I there was no way that that was ever going to settle in my brain in that moment. But she's right. And I think part of the challenge for families is how to manage that goodbye, because slowly you lose a little bit of the person a little bit at a time. And so I can't imagine what that must be like for a family member to get used to you one way, and then you see the disease progress a little bit longer, and the family member goes, oh, okay. He or she, they can't do that any longer. So now I have to adjust my behavior. I'm sure it's exhausting for them emotionally, physically, mentally. Shout out to all the caregivers, the families. It's upsetting for me to think that that is going to happen to my family. Because I'm also a big protector and, you know, the one everybody comes to. You know, my husband comes to me. I'm upset about this, my daughter, my son. We do that for each other. So I can't imagine if this was happening in the reverse and my husband was the one who was sick. I can't imagine that loss. So yeah, it's a lot. That's the my family stuff makes me emotional. I love my work, but the thought of the changes, the thought of the impact of the disease on my family is the thing that hurts me the most.
So here's what we're going to do. We will continue this conversation. The next time we'll talk about that, the emotional and psychological responses that they're going through as you start this journey. I'm really, really, really grateful for your willingness to share your story, T. I
If
really
it helps
am.
someone or
Thank
some
you.
family, I'm happy to do it.
Thank you. And we will talk again soon about that emotional and psychological stuff.
Looking forward to it.
Thank you. Thank you for listening. Be sure that you subscribe and share. You can get more leadership learning from my YouTube channel and by following me on Instagram. Reach out when you're looking for a speaker to energize your next event. Reach out when you need curated leadership learning for your organization. Reach out when you're ready for consulting that will help your organization fulfill its potential. I'm Joanne Smichael, and thank you for tuning in.